Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm really glad that you reached out because I think the topic that you bring up about people in law enforcement and the potentials about PD are very interesting. And I know that there's, I mean, plenty of people out there in this situation. So I'm really excited to get to meet Greg.
I want to be on professional. I've got so much. I can't remember everything. I have notes here. So if I look away from the camera, I hope that's not.
Oh, you're totally fine. I have a computer here. I have my phone here.
I got nothing.
And then Brian has nothing. Welcome to The Secret Life of Parkinson's, a podcast created by people living with Parkinson's to help break the stigma of a disease no one likes to talk about. Now, here are your hosts, Jessica Krauser and Brian Baker. So, Greg, why don't you tell us about yourself? Again, we know like a little bit of your history, but like just let us know your background and then we'll go from there.
I was a police officer in New Jersey for 20 years. And recently I was classified disabled and since has left the department. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
When were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed in 2020.
Okay. And then how quickly after that then did you retire?
I retired probably 3 years ago.
Okay. So what is it about law enforcement that you were talking about as it relates to Parkinson's or its relationship to?
Well, like me and other police officers, I specifically was with an environmental department. We would go out and dumping calls. I was exposed to potassium cyanide during a 2-day hazmat cleanup. Mm-hmm. OSHA prescribed different levels of protection, level A to level D. Level mm-hmm. D being the weakest, which is just rubber gloves and a 3M mask, to a level A, which is the spacesuit. Mm-hmm. Nothing at that time showed us that the chemicals were leaking, but they were. So indirectly, we were inhaling them during a 2-day cleanup. And then shortly after, I learned words like delayed manifestation, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's.
How close in between those times? Like when were you exposed?
5 years. I was exposed in 2015.
Okay.
And it was funny because it was one of these jobs. It was just standard job. Just because I inhaled it, didn't seem important at the time. Though there is an old saying with chemicals, if you could smell it, it's too late.
Right.
The thing that was very interesting was when I saw my neurologist in 2020, she asked me if I was ever exposed to heavy metals. And at the time, I didn't understand that. And then it later popped in my head. I went back to, went through the files and through the report. And sure enough, potassium cyanide is a highly, highly toxic chemical. And later, I reached out for some assistance from a neurologist. And she wrote a letter for me stating that it is plausible that my exposure led to my Parkinson's.
Wow. What about other people that were with you on the force?
No one else has any symptoms of anything else with Parkinson's. And that's the funny thing about Parkinson's and genetics. Mm-hmm. You have the genetic marker or the recessive gene, but that's really only a 1% and 2% chance of actually getting the disease from the marker.
Mm-hmm.
A fireman once explained to me that like a match by itself in a striker is like kind of having the marker and the hazardous material. Strike it, you bring them both together, and the outcome is Parkinson's.
Yeah. Well, that's, first of all, you know, thank you for your service. And, you know, I was in the Coast Guard, and being young and naive and not thinking you need to put on the right protection or going and doing things that maybe you wouldn't do as you get older. I've thought the same thing many times. I used to have to stand fire watch. When they're doing work on the ship. So you're inhaling welding material.
Hmm.
One of the big things that I made the correlation to, and I've spoken to a lot of police officers, all in all, I've collected probably 8 names, mostly firemen, but a few police officers. And one of the things that where there's fire, there's police.
Right.
So you take your average house fire, where they're donning their SCBA, their self-contained breathing apparatus, and who's down the street directing traffic? Police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Folks blowing right by him. Same with car fires. They're blocking traffic so the fireman can put the fire out. What's the policeman wearing? What's the fireman wearing? So you kind of got to wonder at what point are they putting themselves in danger when there's no numbers to support research showing there's a link between firemen and Parkinson's, but there's no numbers supporting police and Parkinson's.
Oh, so there is something that shows firemen and Parkinson's?
Yeah, firemen are 10 times, 30 times more likely to develop Parkinson's than police officers are.
Really?
There's no difference between that and also people that do welding.
Oh, I guess that makes sense. I didn't know that it was that high.
Exposures and you're dealing with pesticides, toxic smoke, superheated gases, solvents. Think about a police officer entering a meth lab. Think about a police officer exposed to paraquat. Mm-hmm. Think about the veterans from Camp Lejeune. And then the fentanyl poisoning. I don't know if you've seen the news, police officers being resuscitated with Narcan because they got in touch with fentanyl and died on the scene.
Oh,
and the simplest basic form, too, how about a tick bite?
Just like from having...
like Lyme disease is a neurological...
Yeah.
I know Lyme disease also...
It mimics.
Yeah.
It mimics Parkinson's.
So, and also too, the veterans from Agent Orange, the delayed manifestation of those guys coming back years later, developing cancers. So there's a lot of exposures going on, but there's not much written about it.
It's like there is and there isn't. Like it's the same thing that we see all the time with like different things about Parkinson's. It's like, I know it's there, but is it being discussed at the right levels or at the right, you know, with the right groups?
Yeah.
I think more should definitely be done at the awareness level to make future police officers and firefighters know there's reactions to these kind of environments.
Yeah.
Well, just in general, I mean, yeah, police and fire, but also like people working around their house even, you know, weed killer, same thing.
But like, you know, like Greg said, it's not just exposure to something. It's like you have to have something going on in your body.
Yeah, but you have the genetic makeup.
Yeah. But I mean, now that we have it, yeah, looking back, I think people would say like, I wish I knew, or I would have done this, but would we have? Like, I think to myself, I'm like, I know that there's people still out there now that are just like, oh yeah, but I'm fine. Cause like, again, everybody thinks you're invisible until you're not,
right.
You know?
That leads you to another question. What environmental factors manifested your PD?
I have no idea. I mean, because I lived in Ohio my entire life. I mean, I can speculate on like one place I lived for 3 months was near a farm. But other than that, I've lived in Youngstown, Athens, and Columbus. Well, and it's the one thing that, you know, we've talked about a lot on here is it's good to try and, you know, for some people, like, you know, really trying to figure out like how they got it. So to your point, like you can actually pinpoint it. So bringing education and awareness to other people who were in your situation, I think is really, really great, to do. And then for those of us that were like, I have no idea like how I would have gotten it. For me, at least, it's just accepting the fact and just
that you do have it.
That I do have it, but then again, bringing awareness to others about all the other aspects.
Like Brian said in his one show, I think it was self-consuming. I think the first year you're just consumed by your Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And then you look for reasons, like, why me?
Mm-hmm. So have you gone back to, like, you know, your group, like your law enforcement group, and educate them, or have you brought this to anybody?
How can I word this? Parkinson's isn't a sexy disease. It doesn't really attract much attention from people. In fact, I think people don't know what to say to somebody with Parkinson's.
Yeah.
Because they completely misunderstand it. They don't really understand it's a movement disorder. They think of Michael J. Fox, and they think of the heavy dyskinesia. They don't understand that I have problems rubbing a bar of soap on a washcloth.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's just life too, because I have since left the department. And there goes my relationship with a lot of the guys. I'm not saying that we weren't friends, but that's just life.
Well, I definitely think it's still something that can be talked about. Like, that's why we keep having conversations with people and bringing things up.
Just making sure people are, you know, that they're using the right protective gear. Mm-hmm. Maybe getting it out there so, like, you know, the police officers have something, some type of respirator, you know, on them when they're responding to fires or car fires or...
So what could you have done differently now that you, like, know the impact? Like, is there something that you could have done?
Prepare for the worst. I mean, is treat every hazardous material call like it's your last. Not to sound like I was lazy, but I was basically doing what I was told to do. Mm-hmm. I should have stepped up. I think in hindsight, I should have done more to protect myself and not just follow orders.
Mm-hmm. Or it's like, this is where I go with, like, you know, yes, we can make changes with ourselves, but it's, you know, how do we go to even further down of, like, you know, getting this in front of the training team, like making sure that this is part of overall training for any law enforcement.
Yeah, thank God my neurologist helped me with the paperwork because I applied for disability and luckily I got it. And I'm lucky to be able to get disability. There's a lot of people out there taking it on the chin who've got Parkinson's and don't even realize it. It's probably from an on-a-job episode that happened years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now there's a presumptive laws on the book.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But most of it is for cancer and heart disease, cardiovascular-related incidents. There's nothing on the books for Parkinson's. There's two states that recognize Parkinson's as presumptive law, Indiana and New York.
Really?
You would think New York would be because of the 9/11 cleanup, but it's not. It's from a police officer from Rochester, New York, whose union fought for him to get disability. And what disability does is kind of like when you're at Epcot, it puts you to the front of the line. Versus me, I had to wait 9 months to get a disability claim made.
Uh-huh.
That's 9 months without pay. That's 9 months without insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Cobra was $3,000 a month. So it took 9 months for them to make a decision on me. I'm not knocking the state because you're talking about government moves slow. But if there was presumptive laws on the book, I would have been easily more taken care of and maybe told that everything's going to be okay.
So you see a movement disorder specialist or a general neurologist?
My main neurologist left the hospital, is becoming now a psychiatrist or psychologist.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. But I have a new one I'm trying and testing out. That's why I was talking about the medicines. I want to try everything I can in the book before I get the deep brain stimulation. Which if you had asked me 5 years ago, I would have said, no way. No one's touching my brain. Now I'm on board with it.
Yeah.
I have one moment in the morning where I feel normal.
Uh-huh.
And anytime you can say, you forgot about your Parkinson's, it's a great day.
Yes, that's what we talk about that too.
So first thing in the morning, jumping in the shower, everything's working on all cylinders. I can shave, I can wash my hair, I can rub a washcloth on a soap.
Uh-huh.
But if I had a lazy Saturday where I decided to get out in the shower at 10 o'clock, forget about it.
So what was your initial symptom?
I started out with a thumb tremor on my right hand.
Mm.
So that was... And it was just odd because I thought it was just a muscle spasm.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then my wife would force me to hold her hand and my hand would shake. She goes, you know your hand shaking? I was like, no.
Mm-hmm.
So the shaking got so obvious, I went and saw the neurologist. And it took 6 months to get the appointment. I saw the neurologist and like I said, she asked me if I was ever exposed to heavy metals.
Oh.
But the nice thing about her was she had great bedside manner.
Yeah.
And she wanted me to get another opinion. So I went down to neurology, University of Pennsylvania, which is about an hour from me here.
Mm-hmm.
I was again diagnosed with Parkinson's. That doctor had no bedside manner.
I've heard that a lot about a lot of neurologists. That it's pretty common unfortunately.
But she didn't care without realizing it. She put me in the University of Pennsylvania system. So now if I ever decide to get the DBS, I'm already in the system.
Okay.
So like right now I'm seeing a new neurologist in the local to the neighborhood, and it seems to be working out pretty well.
What medications, like how's your regimen?
I was taking carbidopa, levodopa, three pills, three times a day. Now I'm taking two pills, four times a day.
Okay.
And I want to say there's good days. When they first gave that to me, I thought it was a placebo. I'm like, this isn't doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mine took me 6 weeks to really, really notice.
One of the cold hard facts I had to do, and this is really tough too, I stopped with the sugar and I stopped drinking beer. I've been alcohol free for over 2 years, 2.5 years.
That's great. See, do you exercise as well?
I do exercise. I do free weights. I tried the Rock City Boxing. Rock City Boxing came around 2020 where they were still wearing the masks.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult, very, very arduous to try and box and breathe.
It is.
So then I tried physical therapy. Physical therapy was okay, but physical therapy caters to the post-operative person. Like the guy that came out of the surgery with knee surgery. Who needs a hot pad and exercise?
Right.
Where they're
it's not enough.
Just on the machine, do three sets of 10.
Well,
so now I join a gym.
You should look up PD Next Steps. Melissa has a tons of videos because lifting free weights and stuff, they're great, but there's certain things about Parkinson's that we need to work on, with our movements. And because I was going just to a typical gym like that I was always going to before, and after about a year or so, I was doing Melissa's gym too, but just on the weekends because I couldn't do it during the week. And my neurologist noticed. She's like, I think you need to really focus on getting yourself to PD Next Steps so that you can do Parkinson's specific exercises. So like doing the big movements, doing we do things with our face, with our voice, with our balance, multitasking. It's like a whole slew of things. So highly recommend it.
Yeah, I saw your videos, your shows, but Parkinson's is interesting too. It's normally a male dominated disease.
Mm-hmm.
Where you and your dance group is a lot of women.
Yeah. So we are going to grow by one more person today. I just got an email from somebody. So we have about 30 women and we're young onset. So there's definitely more of us out there in this male-dominated disease. I think that there probably are more out there, and it's just that we either get overlooked or we're like pushing away our own symptoms because busy taking care of families and working and all the things.
Yeah, I was 54 when I was diagnosed. I consider myself early onset, but you take the cake with your age.
37, yeah. I'm going to be 43, though, now this year. Jeez.
You're still young.
I know. I'm getting into my, is it my fifth year then? 2019?
Year 10.
Oh, okay, jeez. We're getting old with this.
You talked about training.
Mm-hmm.
I think we go one more step, and here's one for you, too. What would you do if you ever got encountered in a car stop with Parkinson's? You can't speak. The car stop's making you nervous, so you're shaking. You can't do a cognitive test. You can't do a balance test. What's going to happen?
That's why George Ackerman is like writing this book to try and make that, get something changed so that people are aware of like, how do you know that if somebody has Parkinson's or what to look for?
Like, I sent Steve a link to a guy who did his best to try and do a Parkinson's awareness, but it was too detail oriented. It wasn't basic. Like, it wasn't very interactive. It was very medical.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to get away from that because we don't do well with that. But I will tell you, I can't remember what it's called or what the guy's name was. This is like probably 2-3 years ago now that he reached out to us, and it's called, Melissa, you might remember, cause I think you and Steve have this. It's pull out.
Oh, the card.
The card. Like you put something, it's a thing that you wrap around your seatbelt. And it says something like, I have Parkinson's or...
Yes, that's what I have in my car.
What's it called?
I'm not sure, but it says I have Parkinson's on it. And that's the first thing an arresting officer would see.
Yeah.
When they come up beside the car.
So to your point...
It's kind of like the autism puzzle piece that people put on a car. There's autism training. But there's really no Parkinson's
training. That's what I was trying to think of. There's autism training, but there's not Parkinson's training for law enforcement, which, and this is a good reason as to why there should be, because if you do get pulled over and yeah, you get all of a sudden you're nervous and you're shaking and it's like, I couldn't do a balance test. Like, you know, any day, just, you know, what would that look like? We should probably get one for you.
You're talking about law enforcement, and there's some basic problems with law enforcement in the case. And give me an example. When I went to the academy with some very young 20, 21-year-old kids. What do they know about domestic violence? What do they know about the stresses of marriage?
Mm-hmm.
They're making some real-life decisions without any real-life experience.
Mm-hmm. This was great, Greg. I'm really glad that you reached out. I really think that this is a message that will resonate with, I'm sure, a lot of people, even like, you know, with military and individuals that we've had, you know, come on to talk about it. It's just helpful to know that, you know, your experiences are not the only ones, you know, and there are other people out there like this. And how can we help and how can we change it?
I know, I tell you a quick story about some firemen. In 1986, yeah. Talk about environmental causes. In 1986, there were four firefighters that fought a tire fire for 4 days in Spencer, Massachusetts. All four firemen got Parkinson's disease.
Wow. That is crazy. Yeah, it's like, it's. I mean, I'll have to research this now. That's really interesting and scary.
Yes.
And it's like, then you wonder, it's like, if is their Parkinson's different from like the genetic type of Parkinson's? Because you know how we're all different.
Yeah.
I believe a chemical onset Parkinson's will progress faster than I think just a genetic Parkinson's.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Hmm. Well, Greg, thank you so much for reaching out to us and sharing your story. And hopefully everybody was able to take away, you know, something from this as to anywhere that you work, you know, can have some sort of, you know, challenge. So you just have to make sure that you're protecting yourself. So.
Absolutely. And in closing too, I got a little quote that was said. RFK said this in his committee meeting. A healthy person has 1,000 dreams. A sick person has one.
And with that, that's our 30 seconds. I like that. Thank you. thank you so much for coming on, and we'll just see you all next time. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is produced by Melissa Carlson and Steve Brandenburg. To contact us, email info@thesecretlifeofpd.org. The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not responsible or liable for any medical advice, diagnosis, course of treatment, or any other information obtained through this podcast. The information provided by The Secret Life of Parkinson's is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast. You are encouraged to consult a physician for a definitive diagnosis.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.